extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I am Andrew Weeby with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Charlie Davies, CD9, the ball don't lie, Tom Bogert, the insider, Mr. Scoops. Getting the full call up, Tom. This is what you get while I was gone. I was in Vegas seeing you argue with Anders on Twitter about whether you were an occasional contributor or what part you had in Extra Time. You're here.
Don't blame me.
Today. Permanently. On deadline day.
Look at the head of the Partners in Soccer law firm just having a week away at Vegas.
Well,
silent
drop. That's the way it works. Don't you know? Like the partners.
Was this a
pick
company outing? Did you guys get a memo? Or is this for people who are on the side of
the building? I'm expensing
it
all back to you. Your returns will be taxed based on this. Also, Tom has agreed to pay us $50,000 to appear on this show. I don't know if you saw that news.
2024
around,
general allocation money. It's going to convey as a fourth round pick.
But
discovery rights to a player to be named later.
Well, it's going to be Hundwalla Bawana. We do have to throw that in for Tom. Mm. That's what he wanted in return.
Okay, so it is transfer deadline day. We are a tad punchy. Transfer deadline day ends at 11:59 Central Time, the elite time zone, Central Time. That's because the soccer house is in Chicago, which is Central Time. What did I miss, guys, other than the biggest trade of the week here? Jacob Schaffelberg to Toronto FC on loan for GAM. Huge move. If you'd like to spend the next 15 minutes dissecting that one, I'm ready to do so. What does it mean for Nashville? Is it just sort of a get under cap compliance for Toronto? Does Nashville need that international roster spot? Feel free to discuss. Otherwise, Tom, you could tell us what you're working on. Right now, this second, he may be leaving us from time to time to text, to make calls, to do whatever it is that you do, Tom. What are you working on, man?
Yeah, I'm pretty convinced that the whole point I'm here is that in the hopes that I have to walk away numerous times so you can take pictures of me standing in my room trying to look the other way while I'm like crippling anxiety that I forgot to mute my mic so you guys are hearing like both ends of the conversation. Yeah, we're working on a lot of things right now. LAFC are probably at the center of a lot of things. They're potentially adding a Gabon international winger, Dennis Bangura. We were talking about this in the pre-show. I hope I didn't butcher that already. That would be a great start. Obviously, Matt Miazga to FC Cincinnati. That's not done either. If LAFC do add that winger or another player, Ismael Tujuri-Shrade might go to the New England Revolution. Minnesota United are still working on signing one-time U.S. Youth International Wonder Kid and now Mexico International Jonathan Gonzalez from Rayados, CF Monterrey, on loan. That's not done yet. Talks are still happening. And Charlotte FC are continuing to work on one more addition after they announced the signing of Nathan Byrne as a right back and trading Christian McCoon. A lot of things are happening. There are a lot of texts. There are a lot of me staring into my phone, not blinking, hearing things. And you know, it's all good. It's good fun. A good way to exist and live.
As he chugs coffee. What's the just tell people what the day is like for you, what the weeks leading up have been like how often is your phone going off? Are you cycling between, you know, messages, WhatsApp, DMs, receiving calls? What is the day like for Tom Bogert on transfer deadline day?
Yeah, all of those platforms. It's me staring at my phone, afraid that I'm going to miss either a call or a text or something, sending a lot of questions, asking a lot of things, double checking, triple checking. Like last night, I think I got off the phone at like midnight. I was like, I need to just go to sleep at some point. And I was in Denver just on vacation with my saint of a girlfriend who understood that, hey, once in a while, I might have to take a call even while we're on vacation here in Denver, even though there's no soccer to be had here. So yeah, that I'm sure she enjoyed.
Whoa. Commerce City's own Colorado Rapids.
Oh my gosh, Rapid fans are never gonna forgive you for this. All right, we have a lot of transfer news to talk about. Some deals done, some not done. A bunch of midweek action Tuesday and Wednesday. Of course, the League's Cup showcase. One, Ricky Puig to the LA Galaxy is probably gonna lead us off here. But we do need to start with some news because this is our last show from the AT&T 5G virtual studios. We'll be, I guess, I don't know, it might still be the AT&T 5G in-person studios because on Sunday night in St. Paul, Minnesota, at Blackheart, across the street from Allianz, the three of us, David Goss, Charlie Davies, and myself, Andrew Weeby, will be live for the first time. This is history, Charlie. We're making history at MLS All-Star 2022. The show's going to start at Blackheart at 7 p.m. Eastern. Now, look, that's when we're saying we're going to start. I'm going to hope that we start at that time, but historically, we are not the most punctual of recorders in the world, so we'll try to hit that. What I'm saying is I'd recommend you come early because there is a 200-person capacity at Blackheart. We'd love to hit that. To help us hit that, we have put down the credit card. We will be paying for drinks, and Anders, as he did in Seattle, will have drink tickets. You can go find Anders, you can find one of us, and we'll hand you a ticket. That ticket will be good for a drink of your choice at the bar. And as was the case in Seattle, we will give out tickets to anybody who asks for them, literally until all the money is gone, and we may end up upping that tab at some point. But there should be more than enough for everybody to have a drink. Anders will be wearing Sounders gear, predictably so.
I thought this just went without saying. I thought just people just knew that.
It's kind of permanent. It's like stitched into his head. Charlie, you've been notably quiet here. I see you checking your phone.
Yes.
Come on, man. Bring a little heat. Let's go.
I thought he was just going to leave it as yes and move on.
How do you feel about the opportunity? Going live.
I'm hyped. I mean, one, I'm a massive fan of Khalid, so that goes without saying. I'm a massive fan.
Oh, you and I are hosting
of
the concert on Monday, by the way.
Yes.
Charlie, you know, last time we were at, I think it was Blackheart.
Yes. I think I put you in a bear hug.
I would just say we both showed our wrestling abilities.
Okay. You showed a great ability to fall.
So like, if history's any indication, there might be a live wrestling match between Charlie and Dave.
To be clear, for the record, Charlie's still scared to play me one-on-one in basketball. So just throwing that out there as well.
Oh, we'll get that in too. I love the city of Minnesota. I mean, incredible people, food. I'm pumped. I mean, this is why we're going. We love it. I think the game will be fun. I'm looking forward to the skills challenge. So I'm hyped. I'm just trying to be like easy.
You're
I don't want to get
trying to,
too,
you're trying to keep
too
the energy
the
at a sustainable level. I also appreciate you went full British there and the city of Minnesota. That's some good stuff, you know. City of Kansas.
Minneapolis. City
things
of Minneapolis.
Things of that nature.
It.
And of course, Blackheart's in St. Paul. We're going to the Twin Cities. We're happy to be there. Remember, 200-person capacity. Show starts at 7. Afterwards, Dunor, Bruce McGuire will have a DJ set. We'll stick around, hang out. And then as long as the money lasts, drinks will be flowing on us, and then we'll pay for our own at some point. Other news for All-Star, Brandon Vasquez is a member of the All-Star team. So, yeah, Tati gone on loan to Girona. We all know that. We've talked that through. Now Brandon Vasquez gets what he deserves. I believe it's 13 goals, 5 assists at this point. I don't know. 4 assists? Okay. I'll go check. I think it's 5. But either way, very impressive season, closing in on 20 combined goals and assists for him. I don't know if it's because I hang around Matt Doyle too much, but I sort of have begun to believe that he'll be on the plane to Qatar with the U.S. national team, despite the fact that he hasn't been in that team at all. Charlie, David hit us up here and he says, is there a chance Brandon Vasquez is on the plane? I just want to get you on the record. Yay or nay, right now, this moment in time, where do you stand?
Yes, there's a chance. There's a chance with
No. I didn't ask you to like.
You said,
waffle.
Is there a chance?
No, I didn't ask you to waffle. I said, yay or nay.
I do not think he's on the plane.
Okay, Dave, what do you say?
I think he's 100% going to be in the September camp. And that's as far as I think I'll go. Because I think that's what it relies on. He could do as much as he can to get the chance. He's got to get into the group and then play from there. So
Can I just say this? Because I feel like people are all over the place with Brandon Vasquez. This is what I've seen watching him live, watching the national team, seeing where we are with our striker pool and the players that are currently with their clubs and kind of have the next 4 or 5 months to get fit and to get in form. Brandon Vasquez is playing the best of his career right now. He's in the best form, the best run of games right now. He, for me, still has to develop certain qualities to really, I think, add to this current U.S. men's national team squad in that particular position. He's a poacher. Great. Couldn't finish. He's showing that. I think in terms of getting on the ball and being able to run the channels, he makes good runs, but I think with the right intensity and tempo, and then I think that his first touch isn't there yet at that level. Not to say that can't develop, not to say, you know, Brandon Vasquez is not the answer for us at the nine eventually. But as of now, I don't think he is ready. And I know people will say, hey, Brandon Vasquez is doing this. That's great. We've had players, American players in Major League Soccer, score tons of goals. And you look at Chris Wondolowski as a perfect example. Players have absolutely crushed it in MLS at times and have gone on these crazy goal-scoring tears. But that doesn't mean it translates to the international game, and it doesn't mean it translates to this particular group. So that's what I'm saying. When I see Brandon Vasquez, I like it. He's scoring goals. He's confident. But I haven't seen enough yet to say, oh, he's got to be in that group. He's got to be that guy. Now, if he continues for the whole season at this rate, he's going to go to Qatar. That's evident. If he continues, but that's a big if. So the consistency and then continuing to develop. What we've seen from Jesus Ferreira has been incredible because he's doing different things with his game. He's scoring different types of goals. He has, for me, been incredible in terms of, okay, I'm not only going to score goals, but I'm going to create. I'm going to be able to pop into those channels. And that's what needs to be done for the U.S. men's national team when you're talking about playing with Christian Pulisic and Timo Weah and Gio Reyna. You have to be able to bring other guys into the game. So I've seen a lot of improvement from Jesus Ferreira, and that's why he's still the top guy right now.
I respect that opinion.
I want you to know, Weeby, that I am ceding my time because I know we have other things to talk about and not getting in a fight with Charlie right now.
I was going to say, I want to get in a fight with Charlie.
For that. What?
I will say I think he's better than you're giving him credit for this season. And look, that's what we're talking about right now.
Mm-hmm.
In his hold-up play and his ability to bring other players in, whether you talk about Brenner and the relationship there, whether you talk about the ability to hold it up and drop it off to Lucho and others, I think he's been very good in that regard this year. I think his runs have been very good. He shows an ability to get in behind. I think his pressing ability as a forward is better than Jesus Ferreira's. I think he's more of a physical presence, very obviously, than Jesus Ferreira. He's a different type of number nine. I agree with you. He's got to do it the whole year. I agree with Dave. Actually, the biggest differentiator is going to be in September. His play in MLS will get him the opportunity to show in person with this group of players to Greg Berhalter that he should be there. And if he doesn't do it in September, then he probably won't be on the plane. We've seen a bunch of guys who have performed well in their domestic league, you know, PFOC being kind of the prime example of that one, Haji Wright another one, that, great, that's what gets you in. But what will keep you there and give you the opportunity is performing with the national team, performing in training, showing Greg Berhalter you can pick up on things quickly, because he's going to have to pick up quickly. It's not going to be a situation where, like, he's got a year and a half to, like, learn what the hell's going on. No, he's got to come in and gel immediately, probably. But I think he's been a little bit better than maybe you're giving him credit for. We don't have time to argue about it. He will have to do it himself and prove it. Right now, Tommy Scoop says, don't come to me because I'm on Miazga. So we'll talk Miazga in just a second. FC Cincinnati in for Maddie. We've been talking about that for a long time. Let's hit Leagues Cup Showcase. SoFi Stadium, 71,189 people. It's the first soccer games there. LA Galaxy, Chivas Guadalajara, or should I say USA? Couldn't figure out which one I was watching last night. And then America LAFC. Galaxy 2, Chivas, nothing. Embarrassing for the Liga MX squad, according to many reports out there. And then 0-0 that went to PKs for LAFC as well as Club America. America got the edge.
Could I ask you a question?
Sure.
In terms of being at their best, Brandon Vasquez right now and Jossi Zardes in his prime, who would you give the nod to?
I think Zardes in his prime with the crew would... I don't think that's like a crazy thing to say, right? I mean, in his prime with the crew, with Greg Berhalter, by the way, and truly understanding that system. Yeah, I think he was a more efficient and probably, you know, longevity matters too, right? Like,
no, I was just asking
success
in terms of quality. Yeah,
I appreciate you coming back with that, though, Troy. I felt you mulling that one over.
No worries.
Okay. All right, cool. We're back. How about this one? Dejan Jovetic or Chicharito, Charlie? Which one is better right now?
Well, who is better right now is, in terms of production, is Jovetic. There's no question. For Chicharito to be successful, he needs service. He is a striker that relies on service. His movement in the box is second to none. He's always been that kind of guy. But Galaxy do not control the game. Their midfield has not been strong. There's no connection with a number 10. Vasquez can't move. He's, you know, he's good on the ball, but he just doesn't have the legs. He's not playing next to Michael Bradley and in that incredible Toronto FC team. This midfield, which is what we'll get to eventually with what Ricky Puig could do for this group, but he needs support. He needs service. He's not getting that. Jovalich, on the other hand, does not need service like a Chicharito. He's a much more I don't want to say well-rounded and complete, but he can bring, you know, he has different qualities that allow him to succeed with this Galaxy side because he's strong as can be. He makes good runs, but he doesn't need to just stay in the box. He'll move around. Chicharito is the top class predator, but keyword, he's a predator, so he needs service. He's the exclamation point in the box.
Dave, who should play?
I don't know, man. It's hard being on the show with Charlie because he knows 900,000 things more than me about center forwards. I don't disagree with most of what you're saying. I think what Jovalich brings is marginally more. Like, he's also not in buildup. He doesn't break guys down. He doesn't really create his own shot. He's younger, so I think he's covering a little more ground and an option more often out to the wings. It still seems, and with the addition of Puig in place of Revelison, it still feels like it should and probably will be both of them. When you look at the production from the wings, when you look at the way they could align a midfield, whether it's a, you know, 5-3-2 or some form of diamond, and having Araujo and Raheem Edwards cover most of the ground out wide, whatever it is, the best chance for this team to win in 2022 still feels like with both of them on the field.
And I would just add, you talked about it briefly there, Goss, is when you have wingers, your wingers and your outside backs have to get down the line and whip balls in. How often is that happening with this Galaxy side? All their inverted wingers, they come inside, the fullbacks, they get up and down, but they also like to come inside. The defensively, this team has always been in shambles, so they need to improve defensively because they give way too much space. They get overloaded on one side. So I think for Chicharito, who is going to play, as long as he's fit, he's going to play, needs to have wingers that play a certain style that he can understand, that they understand his runs. And I think that partnership with Jovalich could be incredible in the end if they have the right service and support.
Just feels like the pieces continue to be sort of mismatched in a lot of ways. And you have to also continue to point to the underperformance of all those wingers. I mean, when you have, you know, the profiles that they brought in, the hype that they had with Cabral and with Grandsire and obviously with Costa, and then the lack of production therein, like, yeah, it just feels unbalanced. Ricky Puig, he comes into this side. Look, Paul Tenorio is reporting that Revelison is going to be on his way to France. That deal's not done at this point, but seems the Ricky Puig deal is done. Fabrizio Romano is saying that, yeah, it will be completed. It's going to be a free from Barcelona. It will be on TAM. Puig had a ton of hype as a teenager. He has not played more than 500 minutes in a couple years for Barcelona. He's not like an important member of their squad. I just want to be clear about that part of it. I mean, they basically said, don't come with us to preseason this year. That's what Xavi said, and like, find yourself a landing spot. And this is going to be the landing spot for him. How does he, first of all, is this a big signing? Like, it feels big because some of the reporting around it, because the name, because of the club that he comes from.
It also feels big because it's new. Like, there have been players that have come from clubs like this. We've talked about this a lot on MLS today. We talked about it a bunch yesterday with Michele Giannone. But the names I pulled out were Uri Rossell and Bojan. Rossell came, never played for Barca, came at a young age. Bojan obviously played for Barca, came at 29. This is a player who played at the first team, had that buzz, and is still only 22 years old and was supposed to be the future before Pedri and Gavi sort of stepped up right behind him and overtook that spot. So it is big because it's different for this league and it potentially puts the league in a new space, which is in a conversation for guys like this. And it's not like for like, but what if Shaqiri, when he was at Bayern, came to MLS and not after all of the things he did, right? This is closer to the guy on the outside looking in of some of the top squads in the world who a lot of those players go on to be star players in top five leagues, right? This is what happened to De Bruyne. He went to Germany, then he came back and played for Man City. So all of that, to me, that's what feels really big. I'm excited to watch him play. I think that it's still a huge risk for the Galaxy. This is not like Bernadeschi and Insigne, right, where they're fully developed players where you know exactly what you're going to get. But that, to me, is why this feels so different. And I think it's why it's really affect, or, you know, you've seen people react to it globally.
Is this a good signing, Charlie? Will this be a good signing for the Galaxy?
This is an incredible signing for the Galaxy in terms of being able to recruit a 22-year-old stud. And this isn't one of those players who has no future that Barca is like, get out of here. Barca is trying to create more space financially so that they can sign players. So they were also pushing Frankie de Jong away. They were trying to, it's not Ricky Puig and they said, all right, get out. This is a, we need to create space. We need to have more salary so we can register our players. So this isn't a, if Barcelona wasn't particularly in financial turmoil, they wouldn't just be throwing him to the side. They would give him time. Still, he'd still be there. But because they need to create that space, that's why they're pushing players out. And since he's a fringe player, they don't have time to allow Ricky Puig to continue to develop. Xavi's made his decision. So for LA Galaxy to jump the line in front of other La Liga clubs, Ligue 1 clubs in France, Bundesliga clubs, maybe lower Premier League clubs, this is an incredible signing. He's 22 years old. He has a bright future ahead of him. So for me, the only question is, where is he? Where is his mentality? What is he coming because he wants to find the love of the game? Is this a Carlos Heel type signing, a player who could potentially spend the rest of his career in LA Galaxy if he feels comfortable, if he feels like this is a home and he can play at an MVP level every single season and he's going to give his heart and his soul to the club? Then home run, grand slam. So this has the potential to be one of the best signings in Major League Soccer history.
Are we really hyping it up that far, though? Are we really saying
that feels excessive?
Has MVP
potential? Okay, I'm on both sides of this.
He has MVP potential?
Wait, we're talking about...
This guy's 22 years old at Barcelona.
Yeah, the guy who was named as the next Iniesta coming on a free transfer at 22.
Ryan Ball was also the Scottish Messi, and we were really happy about that signing and gave it the correct plaudits, but like we weren't saying that it was going to be the best signing in league history or whatever.
No one's saying it is. It could be. He's 22 years old.
He's on
the
a TM
potential
deal
that he possesses. So what? What does it matter if he's on a TM deal? Technically,
so is Gareth Bale.
So is
Gareth
exactly.
Bale, Tom. So is Gareth Bale.
The whole point is, You're bringing a player who has the technical ability that ranks among the best already in a team that it is desperate for what he provides positionally. He has the ability to possibly fit into a team and completely change the dynamic of the LA Galaxy and allow them to absolutely flourish because they desperately need a player of his quality central in the central part of midfield. So what I'm saying is, if he is happy and plays with 100% like motivation, this could possibly be one of the best signings in MLS history on a free on top of that. So yes, yeah, that's what
okay
I'm saying.
I'll give you. I'd say the fact that he's on a TAM deal, that's a huge win for the Galaxy. Obviously, they can't do it any other way, given the situation that they're in. Helps that he came on a free from Barcelona, which, you know, I might quibble with the side of, like, they would hold on to him. It seemed like they're kind of forcing him out of the squad, either go on loan or find a permanent move. Mm-hmm. It's great for the Galaxy to be that team ready with open arms to say, here, welcome. It's even better that they've got Brugman now, and they've got Marky Delgado behind him to give him the structure that he's going to need. We can
Excuse me, Mark,
the center
back. Please respect him. Huh? Mark
what?
Delgado, please respect him.
Yeah, sorry, I've been on vacation for 10 days. It all gets erased in that amount of time. Ravelison's loss hurts, I think. But to get him in on the cap, you got to make moves, and you have certain assets that are worth something. And at this point, Ravelison was worth something, obviously. So you make the move.
The one thing I'll say is, and I agree with Charlie in saying, like, if this hits, it will be seen that way. is I do think Barcelona is such an outlier in, one, the way they develop players, the players they ID, and then the things they require, that even if his mentality is there, there is a chance that he cannot affect the game in MLS for the Galaxy the way you'd like him to. The game will not come to him. They will not be ball dominant at all times. He will have to cover ground. It will be physical. So I think there's a little bit more risk than what Charlie's saying, which is just if he's locked in and ready to go, it's sold. But I would, if I was the Galaxy, I'd make this move. Like, this is one that comes across. It sounds like, Tom, maybe you know better, it sounds like they were in for Sergio Roberto. Barca said no, and the Galaxy were like, hey, let us know in the future. And Barca came and were like, you know what would be cool? If you took this kid for free. And they were like, sounds great. And if all of that is true, then that's, it's a move you make no matter what, and you make the pieces fit around it.
I like the fact that he's said, or at least the reporting is, that he wants to go back to Europe. I understand what you're saying about Carlos Gil, Charlie, and I just think it's different points in careers for the two of them. But I like the fact that there is that motivation to come and thrive and be an example. And that's a great example, as you said before, of guys like, you know, in the Shaqiri, or you think back to like, I'm trying to think of different guys that were in that position anyway, like star players that sort of had their, you know, young players had the star wane a little bit, needed to jump up. Maybe MLS can be that. Do you have any details for us, like nitty gritty on the Galaxy's chase here? Tom, I know you're taking other calls at this time, so, you know.
We'll, Tom's we'll like, let's move you. On to the next 37 what? Moves. This is old news.
Yeah, no, I think that it's all out there. But pretty much Paul Tenorio was on this, pretty explained it pretty well, as far as I understand, that they had to make the move to get Ryan Reveles in. Like, they had to create the salary cap to sign him to a Max Tam deal. And Reveles in the deal had to be, like, done and completed, not just, like, agreed or whatever, because the deadline is today if you're listening to this on Thursday. So it all of the paperwork and all of that needed to be filed to officially be able to bring in Puig. So like, that's kind of what the holdup was, because I think of Fabrizio Romano and other people were reporting for a few days that the agreement was in place between the Galaxy and Barcelona and Puig and all that. But like, it there was a chance that this didn't get done, just because there it wouldn't have mattered if there was agreements or medicals or whatever for Revelson or anybody else that was going out. They had to be officially filed, completed, and done in time to do the same thing for Puig.
All right, we don't have the official on Puig yet, but it seems like it's there. By the way, Leagues Cup Showcase, I've been a huge fan since the start of this competition. I mean, it's one of those historically been in my heart sort of things.
You and Johnny Perez easy transition. Grew up with it.
Johnny Perez. Johnny Perez, Chivas fan, comes in, scores the goal. Maybe, I don't know, I haven't seen any news on Chivas's manager, maybe without a profe here, depending on what happens down in Mexico. But a 2-0 loss for them in a disappointing season. No good. It seemed like an awesome night. It seemed like the environment, especially as they sort of got past 6 p.m. Pacific time, local time, and people were able to get into the stadium, or at least the Copa America fans were able to, was absolutely popping. As I said, 71,189 people there. It's the first soccer game at SoFi Stadium. Huge success for all the clubs involved, for the league. So congratulations on that one. This is the sort of the preamble. We'll get the full thing next year with Leagues Cup. Obviously, you know, I can't wait for that. I think it's going to be an amazing competition. I'm excited for sort of these big names just as much as I am like Mazatlan, RSL. We'll see how much it says about the two leagues, but props to the Football Medicas guys for hosting the whole thing last night. I thought Sebi and Herc did a great job with Mauricio and had some great conversations. But I think the big game, at least at the end, was this LAFC America game. We also have some news around LAFC. Like, do you want to talk about the game, Dave, or should we just talk about the moves? Like, how do we balance this here of a 0-0 draw?
I think we can talk about the moves. I already said it on MLS Today. You can go listen. I want to see the paper. I call BS that they did any opposition research on LAFC or on Club America PK shooters for the Leagues Cup Showcase. John McCarthy was reading a menu for post-game dinner and then just staring at players and pretending he knew which way they were going to go. So that's the only thing I need to say.
By the way, Michele Giannone reporting that Club America is pushing for Brian Rodriguez. What do you think about that?
Chirundolo really likes him from what I've said and what I've heard. And I think from what Michele has reported as well. Like, so that's why, like, I've not known exactly what to do with some of these reports. He was linked with a move to Brazil. Yeah, I was hearing jokes from people at LAFC that like all these Brazilian teams keep on offering like free loans and stuff like that. So not exactly financial incentive. So I'd imagine that this wouldn't be, nothing would be for cheap or easy for LAFC to get rid of Brian Rodriguez if they did.
Oh, sorry, Tom.
No. I was just going to add that the Liga MX transfer window is open through August. So this isn't going to go away tomorrow if it's not done.
this move feels like one of the teams in the region are figuring out there are MLS rules, but they don't know how they work yet. And so the assumption is Gareth Bale and Chiellini. Well, then who can we take from LAFC, right? Like, I think teams are starting to realize that, like, oh, you know, Pellegrini has to go somewhere because Inter Miami can't have a player. And they're starting to try and figure them out across other teams. But LAFC, again, Gareth Bale's a TAM player. They don't know that. So Brian Rodriguez can stay and LAFC continue to be competitive. But that's what this feels like, is teams are trying to, like, get a deal off of LAFC as if they are back against the wall. And that's not the case.
Yeah, LAFC is saying no loans, just substantial sell, quote. That's the reporting from Michele Giannone. The other news here, of course, you had the Yusuf Demir rumors, which have since been debunked. He was a young sort of winger, could be forward in Austria, that had been at Barcelona, that was linked and then subsequently unlinked. Denis Bouanga is the guy from St. Etienne that we're talking about now. Mm-hmm. He's a Gabon international winger, can play forward. He's 27, 35 goals, 16 assists, and 135 Ligue 1 appearances. Charlie, LAFC, man. They traded Danny Musovski, by the way, 250 to RSL. We can break that one down here in a second. They're trying to do everything they can to be in position to win MLS Cup. Mm-hmm. Do they need a player like Denis Bouanga? And if they sign it, what does that say about what they're attempting to do here in the year 2022?
No, they don't. They don't need another player to win MLS Cup. What they just need is everyone to be healthy and fit. That's it, is getting everybody on the same page, getting Gareth Bale up to speed, Carlos Vela. If you have these type of players, and I mean, just even a player like Chiellini, what he brings to that team, if he's fit and healthy, I just don't see how they do. I mean, there's obviously upsets. You have to have, I think, a great tactical game to beat this LAFC team if everyone is fit and playing well. So they don't need to add anyone else. And, they have Tajiri Shradi. That's another player who Tom was talking about before we got this going, is man, the Revs could possibly sign him. They have potential. They have depth for days. So they don't need another player. They have a free DP spot. Maybe that's an opportunity to go find an incredible young talent and say, hey, you can continue to play here, and we can kind of get you back to Europe if that's where you want to go.
Yeah, so the Bouanga deal, they've been talking. I was told a few days ago that nothing was done. I was told yesterday nothing was done. Apparently, LAFC have upped their offer, and they're still kind of pushing to get this done. And part of the reason why Musovski was not just, I guess, available, but I believe that they needed to do some moves around the kind of the fringes of the roster to create space. That's one of another reason why Musovski was available. The Ismael Tajiri Shradi stuff, it's contingent on LAFC signing Bouanga, or if they have other targets that they're looking at. So these are all related, and these are all kind of the moves that LAFC are trying to be insatiable. They're trying to, like Charlie said, they don't need to make another move necessarily to have a chance to win MLS Cup or hold on to Supporters Shield, but they're trying to continue to improve it at every way that they can and not kind of just rest on whatever they have. And again, this is the team that's atop the Supporters Shield that already added Bale and Chiellini, and now they're looking to add, a 27-year-old prime player who's spent all of the last 3 or 4 years in Ligue 1 contributing double-digit goals and assists. And like, they just got relegated in League Two. He had a lot of goals and stuff. Like, this is a player that should kind of trend well in MLS, and there's a reason why he won't be cheap. But again, that's going to come down to the wire today as of 1:20 Eastern. I was told that nothing was done yet. Yeah, no new text on that. So again, there's a lot of moving parts, and again, that's why Musovski was available. That's why Tajiri Shradi might be on the move to New England again if this gets done.
Is Chicho Arango part of any of this?
I'm not sure. I mean, again, that would take a huge amount of money. Like, you start with the Paul Areola was the most expensive with intra-league trade at $2 million plus some incentives and stuff. You start at $3 million. Like, this is a guy that the fee there, I think, would never really be realistic to get hit again, unless that LAFC feels some other way that they need to make this happen, or there's just such a disconnect between the coaching staff and Arango, which I'm not sure that there is. So I wouldn't expect it, but I'm trying to not be definitive because things can be crazy.
Can I say I love the Danny Musovski move for RSL?
Agreed.
It's just a really good sort of like RSL-esque low risk. 250, reason being he's out of contract at the end of the year. He'll go to RSL now, and I assume that they probably have a agreement in place on a new contract. Of course, performance incentives could push him higher. Feels a little bit like the Brian White one, where it's a guy that just, you know, needs more time. Musovski didn't get as much time as Brian White, but he's been crazy productive in every minute. You have to ask yourself, is that Danny Musovski? Is that being in an LAFC team that just, you know, surrounded by really good chance creation type players? We're about to find out, but he can play center forward. He can sort of play on the wing in a 4-4-3, a 4-3-3 if you want him to. High defensive motor. You know, got a knack for finding the ball in good spots. And this is one of those moves that for teams like RSL, you're looking around the league and you're thinking, okay, well, Cordova's probably not going to stick around. Bobby Wood is hurt. It doesn't seem like Rubio Rubin is a guy that Pablo rates. You have to look at the contract that he got. What
Rubio Rubin could also be on the move over the either today or over the next month. So keep an eye on that.
Well, here comes Tom with some more information there. Yeah, it just seems like a great low risk move.
Well, so if that's the case, I think it's fine. I agree with you, right? There's no negative here for RSL. They gave up very little for a guy who could have potential. But if they are going through the rest of the season, but especially into next season with Wood and Rubin on the roster, there is a problem because that's just too many center forwards. I don't think Musovski is a winger in a 4-3-3. I think that was fairly well proven with LAFC, where it's going to be harder for him at RSL. So I agree. The move, you make it if it's out there, right, at this number, and then you figure it out later. Maybe you move him on again. Maybe someone comes in for him, whatever it is, over the next few years. But they've given a decent chunk of money to Wood and Rubin. They have not gotten production out of that position. And I'm still sort of waiting for the, well, new ownership, now we're going to change the way we operate. Because this feels like RSL of the past and not what we were promised would be RSL of the future.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that. I could see that as well. I got some news breaking right now in the transfer window here. John Molinaro, Michael Singh, a bunch of others here. Bob Bradley apparently at the dais today in a press conference saying that TFC is not only close to bringing Richie Larea back, but they're hoping he might be able to play Saturday against Nashville. Bob is quoted as we're saying we're down the road far with bringing Richie back. What do you think, Charlie? Richie Larea back in the six.
That's a good thing, because Richie Larea is a baller and he's got a World Cup to prepare for. So I think for them, in terms of a player that's going to be a game changer for them, it's a massive signing. It is a massive signing because he could play on the right or left. He's one of those guys who knows how to have success in this league. He's motivated. I love it from Bob Bradley.
How's this going to look, Dave? What do you think? Where's he slot in?
I mean, right back has been a rotating door so far. Shaquille Marshall-Ruddy hadn't started a game since March. He got the start in New England this weekend. Kosi Thompson hasn't put his stamp on that position. Mm-hmm. He's similar to what Richie had to do, converting from an attacking position to a right back. And I've said this a million times, this is a win now TFC roster. Maybe not 2022 specifically, but Lorenzo Insigne is not there for the long term. Michael Bradley is not there for the long term. This team needs to win something in the next 2 years, and Richie Larea gets you closer to that. I believe it is a loan. They do have to give up a decent amount to get him. So that all becomes a little bit hairier of how much are you willing to give up for a guy that may not stay full time, but he needs to work his way back into the World Cup roster, and he's going to improve the team today. I really liked the rumors around Dallas. I actually thought that was a better fit, and Dallas at the second spot in the allocation order, I think would have made a lot of sense to put their eggs in that basket, but it sounds like they're a little bit more salary cap tight. And they weren't able to get it done. And I think for Richie, it makes sense for him to go to the place where he restarted his career already once in the last few years.
With Toronto potentially making that move, is there any movement with Ayo Akinola possibly, Tom?
So I haven't heard anything new on Ayo. I was being told by people across the league that he was being shopped or very available, whatever the phrasing that would be agreeable for some people in Toronto. But so with Larea, yeah, like the Dallas stuff was real. They were interested in him, and they were open to a right back upgrade. Rather, it was more about, oh, if Larea is available, let's try to get him rather than we desperately need to sign a right back this window. And as you said, it would make more sense with the allocation order. It was kind of assumed for other clubs like Dallas, and there were some other MLS teams that were interested in Larea. A few weeks ago, the messaging that I was heard was that he wanted to stay in Europe, and it was likely that he was going to stay on loan in Europe. So well done by Toronto for being able to swing this deal. But they do still need to trade up to Dallas's spot in the allocation order. And I know that we've teased it a few times, 40 minutes in or whatever, but we will talk about Miazga at some point. Cincinnati signs Miazga. They have the top allocation order spot. They'll use that to sign Miazga. So then Dallas goes to number one. So Toronto needs to trade up and give Dallas some allocation money to jump up in the allocation order to sign Richie Larea. I've been working on that this throughout the day. I've not heard any details on that. I'm not sure exactly how expensive that would be because today is the last day, essentially, that you can sign somebody from the allocation order. So beginning of the season, that's like $400,000. Right now, it's going to be something less. But again, Dallas will still need to get some compensation.
Oh, my gosh. If they were to get Richie Larea and Legette, this Dallas team is completely transformed. They're already competitive now, but you're talking powerhouse in the Western Conference.
Meanwhile, Richie's looking at what happened in Toronto, and he's like, look, beginning of the year, kind of garbage, but now he's seeing Bernadeschi, he's seeing Insigne, he's seeing Tay come in. His boy Donnell is back. He's like, I need to be back in the six. I got to be back home to prepare for the World Cup. We'll see.
The two great romances, stories of 2022 have been Shaq Moore in Nashville and the number one allocation spot in FC Cincinnati. And so I just think it's beautiful at the end of this secondary transfer window to know that both could have happy endings.
Speaking of, let's hit it. Matt Miazga, is he going to land at FC Cincinnati? We have the entire Cincinnati fan base clamoring, desperate for this news. Where you at, Tom? You sort of, you know, there's been a lot of reporting, and you had this morning sources can confirm reports since he had talked to sign Matt Miazga from Chelsea. Nothing done yet. Pushing to get it done on deadline day today. I'll read all your tweets in just like a movie announcer voice.
Oh man, I should start typing him that way too. Sources, you know, at some point earlier in the show, breaking that they are finalizing a deal. The deal's ready to go, all agreed. I was told earlier this morning that Miazga's camp were still pushing for something above Max Tam, and since you were holding firm that we can't offer you anything more than Max Tam, we can't use a DP spot, we don't have one. So deal's agreed. It'd be a free transfer from Chelsea, and a Max Tam deal, so he won't occupy DP spot. He won't cost a transfer fee. I'm sure that maybe there's some incentives or some sell on or something to kind of try to compensate Chelsea on the back end. But regardless, Matt Miazga is just about there for FC Cincinnati, which is a huge move and something that they pretty desperately needed. This is why they were holding on to the top allocation order slot for so long. Like, I'm not sure if it was 100% that they wanted Miazga. I do know they had interest in Carlos Guezo before signing Obinna and Woboto. So the whole reason was that they were hoping to sign somebody off the allocation order and making some money along the way to go from number two to number one and all that back and forth. So it's a long-term vision from the front office, which is something that cannot be said about this team prior to Chris Albright and the new regime kind of coming in. They waited a while on Woboto, and he's been awesome since he got here. Now they waited a while on Matt Miazga, and I financially this couldn't probably be any better for them.
You like it on Max Tam, Charlie? We've got some questions here. I'll throw them at you. Matt Wisp, how would the addition of Miazga impact the potential FC Cincinnati playoff run? And Matt Skinner, a lot of Matts here, saying if Matt Miazga completed a transfer to FC Cincinnati and played well, would he have any shot at a dark horse call-up for the USMNT?
Yeah, I would say it is a game changer for this FC Cincinnati team because they have to win games 5-4, 4-3 because their back line has been really poor. So when you bring in someone with that experience who's had so much success in Major League Soccer, it's a massive win for FC Cincinnati. I could see them now with a healthy group being, you know, I could see them making an Eastern Conference final. It's that type of group. When you have Lucho Acosta, Brennan Vasquez, Obinna Woboto, who's been fantastic, their spine will be strong. They've been missing a center back. Blackett has been really poor for most of the season. Ian Murphy's young. Jeff Cameron, he's been up and down. I think now you're bringing in a center back who you expect to one, deliver and be consistent. If they have that, that's the one piece that they're missing, really. And I think you have to give a standing ovation to the front office, Albright and FC Cincinnati for pulling off this move. So this definitely puts them in that conversation. In terms of FC Cincinnati and him being a player who can get back in the national team pool, if they were to go on this incredible run and he is a standout, an absolute standout.
He's shutting down Brandon Vasquez in training every day. You know he's at that level.
I still don't think he goes to the World Cup.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I agree with you, Charlie.
That.
So
that
the only
good build up.
The only thing for yeah, him, so. The only thing for him is, and a reminder, he got sold to Chelsea because of how he played in a high pressing system where he covered a ton of ground over the top at the New York Red Bulls. That's why this fits for Cincinnati. That's why it fits Pat Noonan and Chris Albright. That's why the move makes a ton of sense. It also then puts you in a space where, what was the last thing we heard from Greg Berhalter in Football Americas last week? That he needs to see John Anthony Brooks play in a high pressing system and show that he can cover ground and chase. So for Miazga, all of that's a positive. I agree with Charlie. I think it's too far away. But for this team, this is a home run of a move. And now you look at their biggest weakness along the back line, and it's not just that he improves it. Now they can build it for the future. Like, I couldn't tell you in this offseason which fullbacks they were going to ID to try and bring in. Or is Ian Murphy a starter in MLS? They've already extended Tyler Blackett. What can he be? You're going to get 3 months to see all of that and sort of ID the guys that you think now fit around Miazga, which is why I think it makes them a legitimate, or I think it locks them into a playoff spot this year, but it's a better move for the future.
So, Goss, on that, I think that's the best way to sum it up, is that this is kind of a foundational kind of core piece that, even though that their rebuild was a little bit ahead of schedule, I don't think really realistically anybody thought that they were going to be not just in the playoff race, but like you going as far as to say that you think that this absolutely makes them in the playoffs this year. They weren't going to try to use that short-term success to sacrifice long-term plans or long-term goals or long-term flexibility. So I think again, this is why they were kind of really holding on to Miazga. It's why they really were trying to hold on to Wuboto. So I think that that's kind of the best way to frame it, as you just did.
Right now, Cincinnati on tiebreaker, and look, goals scored, not their problem. Goals allowed is 42. That's among the worst in Major League Soccer. In the East, only DC is worst. In the West, only San Jose is worst. So goal differential is the first tiebreaker that you got to deal with after wins. So need to start picking up some wins for Cincinnati, because on tiebreaker they're below the line. Charlotte right now above the line in the East after beating DC last night. But you're right, a foundational piece. Matt Miazga comes in. It occurs to me that if it's Max Tam, and right now Max Tam's at like 1.6-ish.
Yeah.
The likes of Alexander Collins and Aaron Long and others are going to be going into this offseason as free agents with that number in their mind, saying, hey, teams that want me, you might want to take a look at what Matt Miazga is getting paid in Cincinnati, because I could be a similar foundational piece for you.
He is 3 years younger.
That's true. Saying. No, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Him
and Walker
saying.
Zimmerman.
I'm just saying.
Okay. Things are being said. lots being said right now. Lots being said. Okay. Let's talk Revs. We sort of mentioned it. Somehow Sebastian Legette Dubois getting traded from the Revs after 19 games has gotten pushed all the way down 45 minutes into this show. That's how busy it is here at deadline day. Also, the Revs have traded for Christian McCoon, which you and others reported, Tom. He's coming from Charlotte. Charlotte apparently going to sign a French center back, 20-year-old Edilson Milanda from Ligue 2. So that he played a bunch of games there last year. Seems like a good signing for them. Sort of one in, one out.
Can I ask questions here?
Yeah, I'm assuming you guys went in deep on Josie on loan to Puebla, which I'm just so utterly disappointed to be absent for.
Charlie, let me ask you questions now. One, do you think the Legette trade is a change in formation and maybe his spot doesn't exist anymore with Veroni coming in? And two, after watching him in person week after week for the Revs, what do you think about his ability to affect the game in MLS?
Yes, I think this is was mutually beneficial. So one, Bruce Arena was using him as a winger. He is not a winger. That's just not his game. He's not a player who's going to be getting up and down and taking players on 1v1 and creating space from those wide areas. That's just not his game. And so I think for him, he was frustrated because I think as of late, I'm like, man, you look really look fit. And he's like, because I have to run up and down. And he's one of those players who likes to get on the ball and control it, knock it side to side. He's one of those players who likes to be in possession and be central. So I think for Dallas, they needed a central midfielder. They wanted to bring one in. It's a perfect fit. So for FC Dallas, once that opportunity is there and you can get a player like Sebastian Lletget, you make it happen. And for Bruce Arena, what are you going to, you're going to have Sebastian Lletget be unhappy and also not get the value that you were hoping for? No, you get that value. So I think it's one of those things where it for Lletget, it wasn't a good fit positionally. And for Bruce Arena, it's okay. Since he's not going to be playing central for me, I need to make a move. So it worked out. I think for Sebastian Lletget, it's probably the best move you possibly could have made. Now you're playing with Arriola, you're playing with Jesus Ferreira, you're playing with Paxton Pomacall. It's almost like a home run for FC Dallas, because now you're just that much better heading into the second half of the season.
Let me ask you one more Revs question, then we'll get to what it means for Dallas. Mm-hmm. What do you think this transfer window is sort of forecasting for the way that Bruce sees the way he's built the team and where the team is going forward? Because I mean, these are like the two offseason marquee moves, right?
Yeah.
Like it was a huge move for Lletget and obviously Josie on that Max Tam deal himself. Mm-hmm. And then you ship him out on loan, already bringing his replacement. Like what's going on as far as where the Revs are headed and like the second guessing maybe, or is it second guessing on decision made in the winter?
Well, they're misses. You know, you can't get them all right. But what we can say is this team was record-setting in the regular season last year, and they got bounced in the playoffs from New York City FC, who goes on to win. So you need to improve. Their improvements were Josie Altidore, who never worked out, didn't show a glimpse of potential, which is why Bruce Arena shipped him, and that's why Josie was unhappy, because he felt like he didn't get an opportunity. So it was just all around bad. You ship him out. You brought Omar Gonzalez back. That didn't work out. Giving up goals, just inconsistent. So you're there. And then Sebastian Lletget, who was supposed to be your really big marquee signing because he was still involved with the national team, played him out of position. He needs to be central. He needs to be someone who is always getting touches on the ball and your team that dominates possession. He was on the wing, isolated. That didn't work out. So miss, miss, miss. Now, I guess the jury's out on Giacomo Vrioni. We don't know. I mean, if you watched the first game, he missed a tap-in. So whether you played 100 games or you've played 10, a tap-in's a tap-in. I'll give you this, though. Georgi Petrovic, the goalkeeper, is phenomenal.
Yeah, Ferreira. Will Sicard hit us up and said he is phenomenal. The best keeper in the league already. That's where people are at with
him. Right. He is amazing. He is phenomenal. I say the jury's still out on Dylan Barrero.
Oh yeah,
he's shown flashes, but he picked up an injury. He was brought in literally to be like for Tejan Buchanan, someone who can give you what Tejan Buchanan gave you last year. Now, people, I think it's easy to forget the ability that Tejan had, not just on the dribble, but just that tenacity. I am not losing. He worked his butt off at both. On both sides of the ball, but it was that chip on the shoulder you played with. It's that Clint Dempsey. I'm not losing. I'm not backing down. I'm not scared of you, and I'm just gonna run you into the ground. Haven't seen that from Dylan Barrero. Not to say that can't happen, but that's a different type of player. We're talking, you know, top winger in the league type of player that has gone to Belgium. So, yes, it has not been a great season for the Revolution. Defensively, they've been very poor in terms of center backs, very inconsistent play. So, I mean, you're really, you know, Gustavo Bo has been good, but again, he's not a nine. He's all over the place. He unbalances your team if he's your nine. He unbalances your team because he's on the wing, and no one's in the box. So you have a half of the season left, and a lot of questions. It's not a great place, although things could be worse because you still have talent, but a lot of things need to happen to get this team back to, you know, in contention for an Eastern Conference championship.
2 points out of the playoffs right now, tied on points with the Chicago Fire. It's not where 2021 Revs thought the 2022 Revs would be. Tom, I hear your phone buzzing, so I'm wondering, is there news or –
I was just going to add on to the Sebastian Legette stuff, that like a lot of what Charlie was saying too. Yeah. Like this, it didn't kind of suit him. It didn't go as both parties planned. Bruce Arena spoke to this a little bit at a press conference today about, you know, how much he loves and respects Sebastian Legette. It was kind of a mutual agreement. Like when Bruce says that, you know, this is probably good for both parties, it gets absolutely truthful. Dallas were one of numerous teams that were in on this. Dallas kind of came in a little bit late. And Dallas were pretty desperately looking, maybe not desperate, it's too strong, but they really wanted a player to play as a number eight like Legette. Like it kind of really worked out that he was, that the Revs would have been open to moving him and Legette would have been open to leaving. This wasn't him necessarily being pushed out or anything. It was kind of a mutually beneficial move for the Revs and for Legette. And going to Dallas, there really isn't a better scenario for somebody on the fringes of the U.S. national team pool. The same way that Paul Arriola landed in Dallas, as you know, part of that was Nico Estevez connection. The Nico Estevez, former U.S. national team assistant coach under Greg Berhalter. Greg Berhalter kind of knows that these players kind of know that this is the best situation. Like Legette's fallen out of the national team. If he wants to get back into the national team, he probably had to move clubs right now. And there's not a better place than FC Dallas. And I was kind of talking to a source at a different club that joked about, like, yeah, like, we should just not go for any fringe U.S. national team players because they're all going to end up at Dallas. There's nothing we can do. They're all going to end up at Dallas. So it's tough. Again, there were numerous clubs that were interested in Sebastian Legette, and there was one club that came, what they thought they had a deal ready to go or just about, and Dallas kind of were able to get it done at the end.
And Charlie mentioned this when we were talking Richie Larea, but again, home run for Dallas. Fits perfectly alongside Pomacol, can play with Cervania if that's what it is. Will take a ton of minutes, but I watched a team on Tuesday in Seattle, and I know it was short rest and it's a tough away game. And it just felt like Jesus Ferrer was trying to carry too many players. Franco Jara is not giving them production. Hader Obreon's not really giving them production. You're looking at young guys and you're not just asking them to play well, you're asking them to then carry other players. And so I think just bringing Legette's experience, his ability to fill minutes, to connect in the game. And I'm pretty sure he's going to score a bunch of goals there. Like when he has been played in central areas and been a late runner and finding spots, especially off Jesus Ferreira, like he's going to get back to what he does well, which is not, as Charlie said, a chance creator, but as an actual finisher and a connector deeper in midfield. So it makes a ton of sense. It makes Dallas a deeper team, which has been their biggest issue this year, is they just have one of the thinnest rosters when it comes to difference makers in MLS. And I like this idea for them of, they had a golden generation of academy kids. They sold for huge numbers. It's taking a little while for the next generation. That's how it will work. Now you've got some veterans in Paul Arriola and Sebastian Legette that the young players can learn from and play with and be around as they become the next Pepe, the next Brian Reynolds.
I got a question just for you guys. In terms of players who stand the best chance to have a incredible second half of the season, who's in a good position to really make the biggest jump from first half of the season to the second half of the season?
Do you have somebody in mind?
Yeah, I have a couple of players.
Unprompted
in mind.
Homework by Mr. Davies.
Here. I'll throw one out there. Romel Chiodo? I think Luis Samaria is one. With the way Reynoso's playing and the way Minnesota's coming together, and if Jonathan Gonzalez happens, I think Amaria is going to have a really good second half of the year.
Minnesota have also signed a center forward. Why am I missing the name here? Too many teams.
Yeah, there. I've signed a number of U22 players as well, not getting the performances I thought I would.
Some guy named Tom Bogert reported that it's a Colombian youth international, Minder Garcia from Once
Correct.
Caldas.
Correct. So just that deal's
let
all done.
Current Tom Bogert know that past Tom Bogert reported that earlier.
That's a good one.
I said I forgot the name as in the name of the player. I've tweeted too many times. I reported.
I'm just helping out present Tom Bogert. That's all I'm doing. You know, like past Tom Bogert did a lot of things. He tweeted a lot of things, knew a lot of names.
Too many tweets.
I'll throw out Shaqiri, because I think he's been a little underwhelming as far as numbers go. But as you have that build up to the World Cup, and as the Fire sort of chase a playoff spot, I think he has a chance with Jairo Torres, with Mueller, with maybe John Duran. If John Duran wants to be in Chicago, TBD on that.
Don't take him out of context.
Getting a little loose on the Instagram stories there. I think Shaqiri could be one. Who you got, Charlie?
Mason Toy.
Yeah. I think, great shout.
I think Montreal are continuing just to prove everybody wrong. I mean, this is a legit group. Kone is another phenomenal player. I think he doesn't get the credit he deserves. I mean, just watching his ability, how he's grown under Wilfred Nancy, the players are developing under Nancy. They are finally, when you look at this team, they have a number of players, different options. I'm like on this Montreal hype train. After last night and the comeback, they showed the resilience, the character, how they've grown within the game. Even to get like a player like Kai Kamara, still effective, putting him in positions to score goals. Man, this Montreal team could really make some noise in the playoffs this season.
Charlie, you know I'm not going to disagree with you when you bring up my beloved Montreal, but I'm going to go west here. Okay. Cavallini and Brian White, watching Julian Gressel walk in this team with Schopf now playing alongside Kubas. Like, they've got to be drooling over the opportunities they're getting. And one of the other underrated players that people aren't talking about, Ryan Raposo, has crushed it at left wing back when he's gotten opportunities as a pure attacking piece. So I think they're going to get a lot of looks over the rest of this season.
I was going to throw Gault in for the same reason.
Yeah.
Just seems like this frees him up to be more of the player that he wants to be and where he's at his best. Just to like wrap up, you know, put a bow on the Revs side of things. Clement Diop from Inter Miami for $125,000 this morning. It's backup goalkeeper, but then we also have McCoon, which I mentioned, 22-year-old center back. They needed center back depth.
Is Tom about to break news live right now?
The McCoon, you need to put this in because this was in the official release. I need you to know that the deal is for $143,327 in 2022 GAM and specifically $256,673 in 2023 GAM. Specifically those numbers down to the dollar.
It's not, there's no extra change on those?
Working to confirm.
Okay.
There's no tip.
It was one of those round up to donate the rest of the
possibly, change. Yeah, possibly. Exactly. Like 50, you just have the little button that says 15% tip, and like you don't have an option. You feel bad. You don't want to say no tip because there was service. It's a tough moment for everybody. I'm just going to run us through some other ones. There's a ton going on here. Now, let's just hit Minnesota United. You sort of mentioned it. You got Mindaugas Garcia and Jonathan Gonzalez. That one is a little bit fascinating. What's going on with Minnesota, Tom?
Yeah, so that Garcia deal is done. Everything's agreed. Paperwork's filed. They're pretty much, from what's described to me, is that they just want to announce it when he gets his visa or once he's able to kind of be here, rather than, you know, teams usually announce these deals when they're done and when the paperwork comes through. But I think Minnesota are just waiting until he's able to be here. So again, even if they don't announce it today, the deal's done. Don't worry about it. It's all over the line. And yeah, they're also in talks with Jonathan Gonzalez. He's at CF Monterrey. Again, a one-time U.S. youth international, you know, rising talent. The first, I guess, true big dual national panic when he opted to represent Mexico at the senior level.
Not the
level.
First big, like, Tom. Camps. The end of it. When he picked that's Mexico, right. Yeah, the U.S. men's national team ended forever.
So they're really light in central midfield. It's a deal. I think I reported at the beginning of the summer, I believe Weeby made fun of me for this, but I said something to the effect that Jonathan Gonzalez was looking at MLS and there were MLS teams interested in him. That is getting close to coming to fruition. Again, at time of talking right now, I'm told no deal is done. There was optimism last week when I kind of initially reported the talks that hopefully this would get done. So, you know, they're still going here. There's about, 10 hours left in the deadline. So we'll see kind of how that one goes.
Some depth issues in midfield. For Montreal, is Dodson still hurt or no? And then
Dodson and Hayes are both out for the season. Trapp's been out for 2 weeks. He's got at least 3 more weeks that he'll be out. Arriaga's been in and out of the team as well.
Yep, would make sense for them from that standpoint. Nick had a question here to go to our Amaria shout. Is Amaria the final long-term question and solution to the Minnesota United striker question, or is Robin Lode still the number one in a healthy squad? To me, it's Amaria. Like, Lud was always sort of the, you know, like, hey, we got to figure something out, and this dude can fill it. But you don't go sign Amaria, who's been Adrian Heath's sort of like ideal and target twice now, without the hope that he's going to be it. So I think, Nick, that the question's been answered with Lud signing a new contract. Congratulations to Minnesota on that one, and Amaria finding some form. I think they want Amaria to be that guy. How about John Brooks to the Quakes, Charlie? I don't know how real that is. Matthew Hoppe to the Quakes. If you talk to Quakes fans, they just want anybody to the Quakes. Marcus Lopez sold to Feyenoord for a seven-figure deal there. That's big time because he's out of contract for them, so a good move. And then they're getting existential in San Jose. Bradley Schaefer says, do the Quakes have any hope for 2023 since 2022 is just a Sporting KC or DC run from another wooden spoon?
Yeah, it's hard.
Since he was willing to spin their way out, but the Quakes don't seem to have that same resolve as of today. Mm-hmm. Nobody's signed in this window. So, John Brooks to the Quakes. Yikes. Does that seem like a real thing to anybody?
I mean, if they could get him, then yeah, they should, because this team is bad. They are bad. There's nothing else you can say about San Jose Earthquakes.
Just go on it as I see
I it. Think this isn't going to happen until they make changes. They get a head coach. I know Landon Donovan. I don't know Tom, if you have anything more on that, but I know Landon Donovan, Lucci, they've all been rumored to be finalists for the role. You can't move forward unless you have a coach with a direction and you're bringing in players, because if I'm John Brooks, I'm not going to San Jose when it's a mess. I need answers. I need to see who we're bringing in. Is this team going to compete? Because this year, then, like you said, you're playing for the wooden spoon. So why would you put yourself in that position?
So I agree with you, Charlie. And the tweet question talked about FC Cincinnati. They're in very different situations. FC Cincinnati was locked into a bunch of massive spend, long-term contracts with, I'd argue, few players that looked like they could be pieces going forward. I would say San Jose is much more appealing of like their flexibility and malleability going forward, plus Obobese and JT Marcinkowski and maybe Jackson Ewell, who knows, but pieces that I think a future coach could look at and want to work with. I think John Anthony Brooks is a little bit specific the way he has to play to give him that the contract that I expect he would require, which is if Matt Miazga is a Max Tam guy, we're starting to border on DP talk.
I was told a couple months ago that there was no chance that Brooks wanted to come here for a Max Tam deal. Things can change, but that was the stance as of a few months ago.
Continue. But the Quakes would be one of the teams that you could look into the future and say, would you spend a DP spot on a guy like John Anthony Brooks?
So,
and a lot of teams I would say no. The Quakes, I could see that happening.
So I get that. And I think the bigger convo is, would I want the Quakes to spend a DP spot on a center back? Yes. But I think Brooks needs the game to be played in a certain way to maximize him. And if you don't have the coach in place who you know wants to play that way, I wouldn't give him the contract today.
I agree. I would just say, if you're looking at their center backs now, yes, he is a DP. If you're looking at their squad, period, he's a DP.
But they're not going to win something this year, so what's the point?
No, that's what I'm saying. And that's what I've said. I agree, but I'm saying in this team, he is a DP. John Brooks is probably the best center back on a number of teams, if not the majority. So, I mean, at the end of the day, San Jose, they're not going to win anything. They're not going to compete for an MLS Cup this year. So I don't think you can really make moves until you've officially hit that reset button and you hire a coach with a long-term vision.
At least not high profile moves like this. They're in purgatory. They're in purgatory. Like they're hovering.
They've been there, even with Matias Almeida, and he's the first one to yell,
because everybody knew
yell it to the mountains.
Everybody knew it wasn't long-term. Yeah, everybody knew. So, yeah, I mean, maybe at the end of the season, maybe if they knew, hey, it's going to be Landon, it's going to be Lucci, then you have guys say, okay, I can sign on to a project like this. But, yeah, it's hard to convince at this point. How about the Whitecaps? You mentioned some of the signings here. We have a midfield that looks pretty dang legit. You got Gressel in. They're making big-time moves. I want to ask you, Dave, what do you know about Lowell Wright?
He's a good player.
From York to the Caps. A young forward, is that the case? Could be the biggest CPL transfer of all time, depending on performance?
Yeah, 18-year-old. Is his second year starting with York United. Strong build, quick with his first touch. Has been a really good finisher for York United. Led the U-20s as well, which obviously didn't go the way they wanted, but I think was still a bright spot in a tough scenario there. And this is a smart move from Vancouver, I think, to get in early for a guy who was already one of the best strikers in CPL at 18. And so it was only going to get more expensive and get harder to get him as time goes along. And of course, he's a domestic for Vancouver as well. So it makes a ton of sense to bring him in. It's a really good move. He's one of six or seven players that have been sold from the CPL in this window, most of them to Europe. And so it's a pretty promising moment. CPL has a guaranteed amount of minutes. You have to play young players. So it's going to be really entertaining over the next few weeks because some teams have to catch up and force guys in. But York's one of the teams that pushes their young players.
Also, same Adekube rumors. Any legs of that one?
No.
Tom, you anything about that one?
No.
All right. What are you reporting on right now, man? How many texts are flowing in? What's your count in the hour, 5 minutes since this show started?
A lot. It's funny to kind of scroll through either WhatsApp or text messages and stuff and being like one screen, it's like from 10 minutes ago. So it's like there's eight different people you're talking to on these things. Yeah, I mean, I just to kind of piggyback though off the Vancouver talk, like I really like what they've done this window. Like that Gressel deal, like, I think that he's the best right wing back, and that's a specific kind of position, best right wing back in the league, and that's a specific position that he'll be obviously playing for Vancouver. And that's, I don't know, it's something that they really needed in terms of just someone who could create chances like that off the wing. And you know, I was joking about when that happened. I was like, talking to people like in Vancouver, I was like, did Brian White wake up and just do like a knee slide in his living room? And someone was like, no joke, the first text I got today was Brian White texting me like how excited he was that Julian Gressel's here. So these are things that they're doing a lot of, you know, smaller number of moves, and they're finally building continuity. And you could really see, I guess, kind of the planning and the foundation that's been laid by this team over the past couple of years to hopefully build something sustainable from that group, which again is not been the MO of the Vancouver Whitecaps over the last decade. So I think that these are all positive. It's kind of a macro shift in you know, planning and direction for this club.
And all right, let's run through some mail here. Oh, you got something else?
Well, I was just going to say, one of the things that I've been thinking about with Vancouver the last week is, I think there'll be few games that they step on the field in MLS and have the best player on the field. But I would argue then from 2 to 10, they might have the best group, if that makes sense, right? Most of the games they play, Nico Lodero, Carlos Vela, I don't know, Chicharito, Insigne, whatever it is, they don't have one of those as good as Gold is. But they are sort of going to be the case study of if you spend well at every other position and everyone fits your system, what's the high end that you can compete at in MLS? And I'm excited to sort of see it come together under Vanny.
Right now, Vancouver Whitecaps 5 points out of the playoff race. So trying to make a run up the table after a slow start. Union made some Union moves. Richard Odata, 21-year-old Kenyan defensive midfielder, a young center back they brought in as well. We have Evan asking, with 15 conceded in 23 games and 18 assists between all of them, where does this Philadelphia Union defensive unit rank all time? I can't think of another one as efficient on both sides of the ball. And Aaron Boone is trying to start, along with Tom Sweezy, the Kai Wagner for MVP campaign. He's up there for the most assists in the league while also being part of the best defense. And Charlie's shaking his head. What do you think about? Okay, let's start with the more realistic one, Charlie. Let's start with, is this the best defense of all time in MLS? And then we can probably go.
I'll put my hand up and say I voted Kai Wagner, I think, third for my player of the month in MLS. He had 6 assists and plays.
Put
on
that
the
on your resume,
defense.
Man.
Yeah.
Yes. Kai Wagner is balling, but MVP, a left back, that's just, we know that's not happening. Let's just be
we haven't had a fullback win defender of the year.
yeah, but we'd be crying about it a lot smaller. When Kamar Lawrence was in the running.
Remember that.
Hey, look, you know what? I'm just out here trying to help my boys on the outside, all right?
I would say they've been,
my boys
they've
on
been
the outside.
Absolutely phenomenal.
I didn't want to make a mention.
Sorry, Charlie.
They've been phenomenal. They've been absolutely phenomenal. In terms of best back line we've ever seen, I don't think they're the best back line we've ever seen. But given the way they've played this year, I just think the Glesnes-Elliott partnership has worked really well. They complement each other so well. They understand each other. You have Andre Blake behind you. Kai Wagner has been an incredible left back. Baizo and Harriel have been incredible on the right side for them. And then I just think their midfield, the way they've played, high press, the transition game, it's worked really well for them. I think they've been so effective, probably in terms of the best back line over the past, you know, couple of seasons. Absolutely. They've just been phenomenal. But of all time, no.
Let me throw this at you. Who has the best goal differential in MLS?
This year?
Yeah. Philly. Shout out DC United and who did they just beat? Six in Houston.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot they were throwing touchdowns here.
Weeby, you were away, so I know you ignored it. But in the month of July, they put up the second best goal differential in MLS history behind 2017 Atlanta, plus 16 for the month of July.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Better goal differential than LAFC. I had missed that.
How many goals have they given up so far?
15 in 23 games.
Ooh. Now, I would ask
no
you
other
guys,
team in the league. No I'd other ask you team in the league have though. Given up less than 21.
I'd give you this question though. What in terms of that 15 goals against? Who's been more valuable, their back line or Andre Blake?
One versus four. That is so. Yeah, I mean, think this is the problem question. Too. And I've talked to Jim Curtin about this too. There's the reason why Jacob Elliott Elliott and Glesnes.
Just combine them.
Tough moment. Move
Jack.
On from that.
Like Jack Glesnes and
Glesnes and Elliott. The reason why we're not talking much about them for Defender of the Year is that they're both so good and it's kind of difficult to differentiate which one is necessarily better than the other. So they split the votes in terms of, center back, Defender of the Year, in terms of, best 11, stuff like that. So it's difficult in that way. And I think Kai Wagner is one of the best left backs in the league. Andre Blake's one of the best goalkeepers in the league. So that question specifically, Charlie, is kind of a tough one.
Yeah,
also
exactly.
Jose Martinez.
I would also say Alejandro Bedoya has been massive for them.
Yep.
It's another player who doesn't get enough credit because of his age and, because he's past
to
the national team, right?
And, like
exactly. Yeah. Mediocre.
Below par school. Yeah,
good old Chestnut Hill school. But I will say, man, they are a unit. They work so well together. Jim Curtin knows exactly which buttons to push. New York City were going to be the favorites with Tati Castellanos. Without Tati Castellanos, Philadelphia Union, this is their conference to win.
It's wild that Jack Glesnes just immediately called Tom after he offended him.
It is
Tom's,
nuts.
Tom's live on the phone right now.
I think it's with think Jack Glesnes. Yak, actually.
Oh, he's pacing. Yaka so I'll tell Belli. You right now, yeah. This is a big call. If he's pacing the way he's pacing right now, this is a big call.
By the way, big text from Matt Doyle, unprompted into the group chat here for Mondays. Ricky Poosh is the official pronunciation. So we've spent a whole show doing what we do.
I already told you guys and none of you want to hear it. So
there was
continue
debate,
on from here.
You didn't look, you know what?
I've never heard
stick,
Poosh.
You didn't
And
you,
didn't say,
stick your
you say you say Bernardeschi and it's
Bernardeschi. I don't say
yeah.
that.
And you
Weeby
say
does.
No, but he Weeby goes Bernardeschi and I'm
oh,
like,
wow,
yeah,
wow.
Okay.
Now we're just airing it all out. Wow. All the grievances. Just all the grievances. You've had that under the rug this whole time. You were just waiting for your moment. All right, let's run through some stuff while Tom does his thing in the background. What a moment. Anders, we're going to need to cut this entire video of Tom pacing. I know he was really, really insistent that we not do that, but we're going to have to do that. Let's just throw some stuff out here. Crew blew a lead last night, and we talked about Montreal. Kai, rising up the goal-scoring chart here, he's now tied for third with Jeff Cunningham on 134 goals. So big congrats to Kai. Scored a very Kai goal, out-jumping people on a set piece there. We have a tweet from Seth Showalter. Will Caleb Porter ever learn that scoring a goal, then bunkering for 60 minutes is a bad plan and never works? I'm at the point where I get nervous anytime the Crew have a lead now. Timbers fans jumped in on the replies and said, no, we can confirm he's probably not going to learn that lesson. A tough loss
Ooh.
For the Crew. Charlotte with a win against DC United. DC's leaking goals when they're not, crushing Orlando Hearts. John Youngblood, which is a hell of a name. Oh, my God. Can Charlotte FC make the playoffs in the back of the home record? I'd like to see some away points, but performances home and away are night and day. I think that they can, and I think it's because the teams around the line right now are scuffling. I don't think the point total in recent years to get into seven is going to be as high this year as before, so I think they can do it. By the way, the Rapids with a 5-4 win at Red Bull Arena on Tuesday night, absolute, MLS After
Bonkers.
Dark Tuesday night insanity. Afterwards, Gerhard Struber says, quote, his big wish is for a transfer or two this week to provide leadership and quality to the Red Bulls, but says the status of such moves are, quote, out of my hand, Dave. What's going on with Gerhard and his young Wolves?
They're struggling right now, and I think everyone here could say it, right? If they had, let's just say, a top half of the league, number nine, they'd probably be in an Open Cup final right now. And Patrick Klimala keeps hitting the post, and they don't really have other high-level options. And so there's multiple places you could look at improving the squad and adding depth and the heat and the work it takes to press and all those things. But at a very base level, they're up 1-0 in Orlando, and Klimala hit the post twice. And they score those goals. Orlando probably falls apart. Tesho Akindele came on our show the day after and was like, the whole halftime speech was just Cesar Araujo's goal. Like, that was the energy moment for Orlando. And then you go into the Rapids game, and there were mistakes made in that game that don't happen, right? A goal from a throw-in. Sean Nealis falling asleep multiple times. We haven't seen that happen all year. Other issues that grew out of, I think, the frustration that have happened over the last week. But at its base level, that's, I think, what they're talking about. It didn't work with Ashley Fletcher. They've brought another player on loan now from the second division in Brazil, a 20-year-old. Those normally don't hit day one at a high level. And I think that's what Gerhard Struber's talking about. Now, he had to have known what he was getting into. This is not a club that has ever spent for that player or overspent once they've brought in, right? Kaku comes in, that's enough. Luquinhas comes in, that's enough. It's not, let's do what LAFC's doing, just continue to stack talent, talent, talent. But I think that's one of the big issues you're looking at for the Red Bulls.
What are we pacing about, Tom?
Jonathan Gonzalez to Minnesota is being finalized.
Love it.
Wow.
Also, Twitter is saying Ricky Push is completed.
That's just been announced.
Okay, there we go. Felipe Gutierrez to the Rapids, which is a very Rapids move, if I may say so myself. Tyler, maybe hit us up. Says Felipe Gutierrez look like his old self, or is he behind a step after his injury plague? I like the injury plague wording there. And I have no idea what Felipe Gutierrez is going to look like, so we'll let him show us on the field. Here's some fun questions. We'll start with Ryan Refave. Do you guys think that Paulo Nagamura is on the hot seat? Hell no, he is not on the hot seat. This was a year of building and culture repair for the Dynamo, so I don't think there's any chance that Paulo Nagamura is on the hot seat right now for the Houston Dynamo. Maybe if next year goes badly, we could say that. How about this one? Here's Mark Nestor. What is the biggest trade in league history? With all the MLB trade talk, I'm interested in what is analogous to the recent Juan Soto trade. What's the biggest trade? We know that Paul Ariola is the most expensive trade, and those are just going to keep getting set as time goes on. What is the biggest trade? Any moves come to mind here, guys?
Well, I think in the Juan Soto conversation, it's like total package. And over the last 10 years, MLS has pretty much moved away from player for player trades. So you are sort of just talking about sheer numbers. You could argue that there are worse and better value ones for the team, either giving someone up or getting someone, right? Paul Ariola for $2 million, but still being a productive player is probably worse for DC than Justin Miram for $1 million to Orlando for Columbus, who then fell off, and Columbus probably would have had to deal with that issue on their own. Or you could argue that Darlington Nagbe for the same amount for Atlanta to win MLS Cup was
that,
the best.
That was going to be one. That was going to be one that I threw out, is Nagbe to Atlanta, because it helped get them MLS Cup. He wasn't the only piece there. I was going to go back in time, like Landon Donovan's rights from San Jose to the Galaxy. Yeah. Might be the biggest trade in MLS history, just in terms of the long-term ramifications, what it meant for one club and what it meant for the other. Obviously, Chris Wondolowski's rights. I mean, this is like an under-the-radar one. Like, you know, Houston were kind of like, oh, yeah, go on back. Like, he wasn't a big piece of their squad, but that's a big trade in the history of San Jose. On the flip side,
to be
clear, the
Donovan
one,
the Wanda one was for Cam Weaver and a second-round pick for San Jose, which turned into Steven Betashore. So they got Chris Wondolowski and Steven Betashore for Cam Weaver in the end for San Jose.
So there you go. It's wild. There you have it. Big one there. Any trades come to mind for you, Charlie?
None?
None.
D-Row for Dax. At the end of D-Row's career, obviously, he won MVP. Dax ended up being a formational player for three Supporter Shield winning teams.
Oh, he was so good for Red Bulls, Dax, over that time.
So that's
it. Okay. Hit us up. We'll put it out on Twitter. We'll read some more on future shows, because there's a lot more trades to dive into. Here's one in celebration from Nathan HJ. In celebration of All-Star Week being nearly upon us, let's say you have the authority to kill one MLS roster rule. What rule are you killing?
Oh, I didn't read the roster part. And then basically I was going to say I spent all of Instant Replay saying, like, tie goes to the runner, all unknown offsides to just be goal counts. But that's not a roster rule.
Yeah, so. I'll throw mine out. I would eliminate homegrown territories.
I wouldn't do that. I would eliminate. I would say if a player gets signed as a homegrown, they never hit the cap for the rest of the time they are on that club.
That particular club.
I like that.
I could. One you could me. Debate with me about trading homegrown rights there, but the point being, if you sign a homegrown player forever, they are a great option and they do not hit your cap.
I like the homegrown. I like eliminating homegrown like rights because it gives players and clubs the power to sort of decide what the best path for their future is, what fits them best. So they can sort of choose where they're headed without, you know, being held back by the fact that this is where their family lives, which is something that that player in particular, they can't control that, right? Like a player can't decide, hey, mom and dad. I mean, I guess some people do move and there is a way to do that. Or if you're outside of a territory, you can do that. But I would just like to see the maximum number of players have the best possible opportunity for them to thrive. And that in turn will force MLS teams to change the way they recruit and provide opportunities to young players. I think that will be mutually beneficial all around for players and clubs. But this is all just dreaming. Charlie, you got one?
I would go from three DPs to five.
To five. We had a question from Nick asking, do we think the league will ever expand the number of DPs that teams are allowed to have? They sort of have with TAM, right?
Yeah, I would go
TAM
five.
TAM has already done that in a way, and the U22 initiative in a way as well. So you're saying more DPs, more big players.
Well, it doesn't have to be big players, but I think you just have more room to, if you want to spend, if your club is, you know, has the ability to spend, then they should be able to go out and get some, you know, it could be a transfer fee for a young player in South America, in Europe. It could be more beneficial to spend on younger talent. And also you have like a mix of, maybe it's a Gareth Bale, somebody who's in the older generation, who is late 20s, early 30s, who could also provide kind of guidance for some of those younger stars. So I think that would provide a little bit more entertainment to the league.
Okay. You got one, Tom, or you want to keep that one under wraps?
Yeah, I mean, you guys had actual serious and good ones, but a super small one. I think that all Americans and Canadians should count as domestic players regardless of whether the team is in Canada or America. I think it's silly that like Canadian players count as internationals on American teams and that Americans count as internationals on Canadian teams.
I don't know how that goes, but it might be something to do with immigration law. I don't know. That all good.
No. I think that here on ETR, Tom can just fix all visa issues for all Canadian players in the U.S.
Just make a couple calls.
Swipe.
Get in WhatsApp, dude. Get in WhatsApp. Make it happen. Nathan Byrne, by the way, to Charlotte. So a new right back for Charlotte. Seems like a good signing out of the championship.
Was Darby. Darby MLS County, teams so are D-team. MLS teams are just ravaging Darby County.
Makes sense.
Okay. Let's get out of here. Any final thoughts, Tom? Anything you're working on that we should pay attention to?
Producer Anders told me to run through things we're watching. Hopefully, by the time whoever is listening to this, whatever time this comes out, things I'm watching is the LAFC potential DP, new attacker, Buanga. And then if that happens, Jordy Strati to New England Revolution is something to watch. Charlotte are working to get an attacking midfielder done before the window. I'm told that that's close, but nothing is done yet. Coming down to the wire. Red Bulls, still working to sign a forward. Dylan Venti is somebody who I've reported on that's not going to be happening, but they have other options. Maybe Rubio Rubin as a potential trade or somebody to watch over the next month too. I guess Jonathan Gonzalez to Minnesota. I know we just talked about it a little bit, but keep an eye out for updates there. I think that's very close being finalized. Maybe that gets done. Richie Larea announcement, given all of the reporting out of Toronto on that one, and Matt Miazga announcement, given all the reporting from myself and others here for Cincinnati.
There's the laundry list. Please wire me that 50K. Tom, thank you very much. That's it for us. We will see you Sunday night in Minnesota, 7
Let's p.m. go.
Eastern, Blackheart live show, the first in Extra Time history. We're absolutely jacked for it. And then, of course, next week we'll be doing our thing in the Twin Cities for the All-Star Game presented by Target. We are out of here. Happy deadline day, everybody. We'll see you Sunday. Adios.